Okay.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have convened the Joint Committee on Audits for February the 19th, 2018. We are gathered today for the purpose of an informational meeting on the review of the annual report on statewide internal audit activities. And I would ask Ms. McHugh to introduce the subject, and then we will invite up the Secretary of State's professional staff.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, under ORS 184.360, DAS is to coordinate and internal audit activities within the state, and they've adopted rules in accordance with that. And one of the things under the law that they are required to do is actually submit a report to this committee regarding internal audit activities and how those are being used, as well as what's being done in the state. So they are here today to provide that overview, as well as to answer any questions, and I think also to give us kind of a heads up on some of the direction they're moving into and some of the changes that they're looking at. So with that, if it would be all right with the committee, I think we would suggest starting with DAS, and then we can talk about the Secretary of State's potential audit that's coming up on internal audits.
I think that sounds just fine, and with that I would invite up Director Koba and all things DAS. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Katie Koba, Director of the Department of Administrative Services and Chief Operating Officer for the State of Oregon. And with me is Lisa Upshaw, who is DAS's new internal auditor. And what I would like to do today is to go through our annual report that is required by statute.
Ms. Koba, may I stop you for just a second? There's something very strange happening with that microphone. You have a sort of Darth Vader-like quality to your voice.
Maybe if you test. Is that better? Switch to the other
side. Why don't you switch mics?
And we'll hope that if Lisa has a question, we'll just switch.
Sorry about that, but it's annoying enough that. Thanks, Michael.
All right, we'll try that. Is that close enough? Can you hear me okay? Okay.
It's still, just so you understand, if somebody's, it has a little bit of an echo, so somebody may stop you at times just in case something's not being heard. But
I'll stay.
It must
back
be the whole system.
See if that helps better. So what we'd like to do is today go through the DAS's report on state agency internal audits that is required to be compiled annually by statute, and then talk a little bit about where we think, there are opportunities for improvement. And I think I would say, with Lisa recently joining us, as well as the Secretary of State's audit that is currently underway to review internal audit functions in state government, I think we really have an opportunity right now to figure out what is the best use of this resource, what guidance DAS currently provides to agencies, and where we might improve that or make recommended changes. So we really have kind of a window of opportunity here as we look forward on internal audits.
Madam Director, do you have a list of how many auditors there are in each one of the agencies, and any recommendation from the directors about whether or not they deem that number to be adequate in terms of the work that they do? And maybe that's something you'll touch on later in your presentation, but it seems to me it's kind of episodic. Some have strong audit, some not so much.
And yes, one of the tables in the report actually lists the agencies that have internal auditors, the number of internal auditors that they have, and then agencies that are performing their required audit functions through another means, maybe contracting out, as an example. So when we get to that table, I'll make sure that we highlight that for you. But I will say overall that in the course of the last 10 years, we have gone from 66 internal auditors in state government down to currently 32. So there is no question that there's been a reduction of audit staff within state government, and that coincides obviously with the post-2008 recession and just reductions in state government. So as I say, it really is an opportunity right now, and I think the audit that the Secretary of State is currently working on to say, with this limited resource that we have, what's the best way to deploy it, and what are the best set of directions that we at DAS can provide to internal auditors throughout the state. So with that, I'm going to walk you through some highlights in the report, and obviously stop me if I don't go over something that you have a question about. So page 3 talks about the statutes and the rules that DAS puts in place, the statute that's in place, and then the rules that DAS has put in place to further clarify requirements for state agencies. I do want to point out on page 3 that DAS has an oversight function, and in order to coordinate internal audit activities within the state, DAS helped to create a Chief Audit Executive Council, which meets quarterly, and it's made up of internal auditors within state government to really help promote that coordination, to share best practices, to talk about what's going on in the world of audits, and take suggestions and advice back to individual agencies. So on page 4, it talks about the fact that 29 state agencies are required in order to meet statutory requirements to have an internal audit function of some kind. For those, 20 agencies have internal audit staff, and the remainder choose to fulfill their audit requirements in another fashion. So here you see in table 1, this answers the question, Madam Co-Chair, that you had. These are the agencies that do have internal audit staff. They're listed, and then the number of staff that are associated with each agency. So you can see DHS and OHA have a combined audit function with 6 internal auditors for their agency. ODOT has 6, State Lottery has 3, Public Employees Retirement System 4, and then the rest have 1 or 2 on staff.
Drawing on my knowledge of ODOT, a question that's come up over the years is to what degree the auditors remain truly independent, and what is their reporting function? And I don't know whether or not this report dug deeply enough in to assure you as the director of DAS and to assure Oregonians that the audit functions really are independent, and that there aren't so many layers that an internal auditor is then reporting to someone who could conceivably be the subject of a less than acceptable audit report. And I don't know if you went that deeply.
Madam Co-Chair, we did not in this report. I know that the Secretary of State's audit is looking at that, and there are guidelines, generally accepted principles. This is a new area for me in terms of each agency has a Chief Audit Executive Committee. So for an example, in DAS, we have a Chief Audit Executive Committee. The chair of that committee is our Chief Administrative Officer, who reports to me. However, our internal auditor reports findings to the Chief Audit Committee, but also reports directly to me. So that is one structure in a state agency in terms of that audit reporting requirement. My understanding is who that internal auditor reports to and the makeup of the Chief Audit Executive Committee within agencies is very critical, and I believe that the Secretary of State's audit is going to be reviewing that, and I'll let the Chief Auditor speak to that when he
I would certainly like the Chief Auditor to flag that as a point of interest, because absent an independent audit function, there's the very real possibility that you could be touching up your own x-rays. Part of the value of an audit is that independent set of eyes. And if there's criticism of the agency, to be reporting that criticism to the head of the agency may not be optimal.
Madam Co-Chair, I would agree.
So I don't interrupt her again. Madam Chair, could I? One of the things that I didn't understand from the report was why the choice was made to either have their own internal audits or why it was done outside. And so as far as the criteria, and I couldn't discern from the dialogue here, you know, specifically how those choices were made. And I don't expect an answer right now. If it's not in this report, well, then maybe that's another note for the other, you know, audit issue. But
so, Madam Co-Chair, I'll take a stab, Madam Co-Chair, Representative McLean, the other Madam Co-Chair, I'll take a stab at this and refer to Lisa if I answer your question incorrectly. The statute and the administrative rules that DAS adopts requires outcomes. It does not prescribe whether agencies choose to have staff on board that are internal auditors or choose to contract out. I think typically what you see is the larger agencies do have internal auditors on staff. The smaller agencies, frankly, struggle with supporting a full-time staff person, and so they have chosen to go the route of contracting out that function. Mm-hmm. Is that pretty accurate?
Yes. That's
okay. Follow?
Yeah. The only follow-up I would have on it is that I'm assuming when you talk about outputs or you're talking about, you know, what the product needs to look like, that you're considering the capacity of the difference between internal or external audit review, and then also to the co-chair Johnson's comment about making sure it's an independent review or clean eyes or new eyes or, you know, different eyes, that, you know, it seems to me like there should be some sideboards that get to both of those issues. So I'm new to this, you know, especially to this type of an internal audit process, and so those are just questions that I had.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative McLean, again, I think our chief auditor from the Secretary of State is in a really good position to respond to that. As I understand it, internal audits and external audits have two distinct functions. An internal auditor is really a tool for management to track risk areas and make sure that they're appropriately dealing with risk issues versus external audits, which truly is an independent function to come in and do what the Secretary of State often does. Mm-hmm. That being said, there are state requirements whereby internal auditors need to get an external review. Mm-hmm. And so what we have done in state government is oftentimes an auditor from one agency will volunteer to do an external review on an internal auditor from another agency. The other option is you contract out that external review of internal audit functions, if that makes sense.
Thank you.
Please continue.
So table one highlights the agencies, as I said, that have staff, internal audit on staff. And then the columns indicate where they have done a risk-based audit, governance and risk management process audit, and an external review. There are some places, obviously, where there are no's in terms of filling out those requirements. And so we will be following up with those agencies to determine why they weren't able to get those functions done and figure out if we can work with them to see if there is a way to get those done.
And what's the timeline or the report back, or what's the sense of urgency around that?
Madam Co-Chair, this report is required to be compiled by the end of the year, and so we just compiled it the end of last year and have submitted it to you. So now is the opportunity for us to go back and do follow-up with agencies, but there will be another. So agencies' risk-based audits, for example, our guidelines suggest that is done one per year. Not every agency gets to that, but we'll be submitting another report a year from now so we can see what has been made or where there are agencies that are still struggling to get that work done. And then table two, as I indicated, lists the agencies that do not have internal audit staff, but choose to fill that requirement through in most cases, contracting out.
And the contracting out, is that done by a request for proposals or by issue expertise or?
Madam Co-Chair, we do have audit firms on a price agreement, so agencies have access to that price agreement to select an internal audit for their agency. However, I think Business Oregon has their own RFP. I'm not exactly sure which agencies have used price agreement versus going out for their own RFP.
And given the sensitive nature of audits, how often are those price agreements refreshed?
Madam Co-Chair, I can't answer that question, but I can check and see.
That'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on then, I'd like to draw your attention to page 8, which is probably the meat of the report, and this is table four. And this is a list that is compiled from agencies, audit reports, and management letters issued in fiscal year 2017. So this, we have identified, Lisa and I, as we have reviewed this report, this is an area where there needs to be some cleanup. Not every item that's listed in this table actually belongs in this table. As an example, I think Department of Veterans Affairs lists their risk assessment, which is not actually an audit. It's a risk assessment and goes in a different table. So this is a place where we've seen we need a lot of cleanup moving forward, and Lisa will be working with the Council of Audit Executives to really provide better clarity to agencies about what falls under table one, table two, table four, and then we're going to get to a minute the final table, which is the value-added activities.
I guess I'm a lot more concerned, not with what's on the table, you know, risk assessment versus audit, as I am with who assigns the audit report risk, because some of these, I believe, have lawsuits associated with them, and they don't reflect a high. I would think when the state's being sued or a tort claim notice has been filed, that might be indicative of it being high. There's one that I questioned that about fiscal operations of the Arts Commission. Again, it gets a medium, and I have heard anecdotal stories about budgets being overspent, and it gets a medium. For DHS, internal fraud detection, a medium, it would strike me, given the headlines that have been in the popular press recently, as being a pretty big deal. Connect Oregon project monitoring for ODOT. There's a huge six-figure lawsuit involved with that. And as far as I'm concerned, the integrity of the program. And so I'm just trying to understand who assigns these PERS, for example, benefit calculations low. That's great, unless I'm trying to decide to retire and I want my benefit calculated and I'm trying to figure out why assuring the accuracy of those calculations would be considered low.
Madam Co-Chair, as I've learned, and I'll turn to Lisa again, if I don't get this answer quite accurate, the low, medium, or high are assigned by the internal auditor once they have completed the internal audit. So the internal auditor goes in and is looking at the controls that are in place to determine if there's a potential for something to go wrong. So the low doesn't, or the high doesn't necessarily mean that there's a risk for a lawsuit, but that it reflects the controls that are in place that management should have in place to ensure accurate operations of the program. Did I explain that correctly?
So would this reflect then the corrective action? Let's assume my memory of this anecdotal expression of the over spending of a legislatively approved budget for the Arts Commission. Let's assume that it happened. And let's assume that an audit discovered that that had happened. And so now the risk is medium because the management letter was taken into account and corrective action has been,
Madam Co-Chair, that's exactly
applied.
What could have happened. And I think the key is if that's an audit that someone has an interest in, to actually go back and read the audit, and it would have described actions that had been taken, maybe additional controls that had been put in place, basically what the auditor found when they reviewed that program.
One last question. Is there any indication, and I don't know whether this is a question for you all at DAS or a question for the Secretary of State's office, but to what degree these audit findings are discussed with the boards and commissions in place to guide and advise agencies, and in some cases to govern agencies? We've got about a bazillion boards and commissions. We're asking people to do the time at those board tables, and I would assume that a management letter attached to an audit would be a pretty big deal. And I don't know whether that's a box that just gets uniformly checked, that the board and commission actually had a chance to review it. I would assume that if hiring and firing decisions are made, I'd want to know if a manager had overspent a budget. and again, that's, I'm going from memory, so I say hypothetically overspent a budget. I'd want to know that when a performance review came around.
Madam Co-Chair, again, the internal audit is a tool for the agency. I would expect that if you have a governing board, a result of an audit would be something that would go in front of that governing board. But it is agency by agency, and I'm guessing the larger agencies automatically do that. We have not done a request out to say, to what extent are you doing that? And that could be another thing that Secretary of State mentions.
Senator Thatcher, and then Representative McLean.
I was looking up the OARs on the internal auditing, so I just ran into this. And under Chapter 125, Division 700, 135, Agency Internal Audit governing Function, it says if the agency has a governing board or commission, the audit committee must include one or more board or commission members. So is there, I mean, how do we know that's happening?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Thatcher, that's something that we can certainly take back to the Chief Audit Council to make sure that they are indeed having that happen. I can remember when I was at the Department of Agriculture, we did have a Board of Ag member that sat on our Chief Audit Committee.
Representative McLean. Then Representative Wisnett.
You go first.
Representative Wisnett, then Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Director, the audit reports and management letters, are they on the transparency website or on any website that we can review those?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Wisnett, I'm visiting with Lisa about this, who knows a lot more.
We welcome Lisa's testimony, too, so it's not like you have to go through an interpreter. You guys can share a mic.
This is her very first time.
So we'll be nice.
We're going to give her a chance and do that so she can introduce herself and respond to that.
For the record, my name is Lisa Upshaw. I am the internal auditor at the Department of Administrative Services. Senator Johnson, Co-Chair McLean, and members of the committee, these reports are not part of the public record. They're not posted anywhere at this moment. They are an internal document, but they certainly, you could go to these specific agencies through a records request and ask for them. They're not published out to the public. Sometimes there is some very sensitive, secure, confidential information that is embodied in these, so we are not required by statute to post them, and so they are not.
Representative McLean.
And to follow up on what Senator Thatcher and Senator Johnson said, we had the Department of Ed in last time, and we asked them one of these similar questions about if they were going to send the audit out to their boards, and they indicated that, you know, with the amount of boards that they have, as has been pointed out, we have many, that they would not be giving maybe the whole audit to every board because each of the boards had different responsibilities or functions. And I assume that would happen in all large agencies. But we suggested that, you know, at least the what is not private or is not something that has to be secured or cannot be shared, that at least those parts that could be more public would be shared with all the boards or the board that had the responsibility for that function. And it seems to me, after what I heard Senator Thatcher, you know, report there, that we were assuming that there would be some representation of the boards and commissions that would be part of the audit function. So maybe that's just something also to take back to your council and really kind of talk about what we were trying to say in that part of the statute.
I'm even more troubled by Ms. Upshaw's last response, that these are not available. And I'd like to, maybe I misunderstood you. I mean, we have a governor who has said that she prizes above practically everything else transparency. And you just said, if I understood you correctly, that these audits are not available to the public.
Again, excuse me, Senator Johnson, co-chairs, members of the committee. I may have misspoke a little bit. They are available. They're just not published on a public site at the moment, but they are absolutely available upon request.
Upon request. Now, let's dig a little more deeply into that, because upon request, in my experience, is a functional denial. I have been told as a citizen when I have asked for things or been around people that have asked for things, the price tags come back as to be a constructive denial. I don't know what it is now in the child welfare area. Maybe we would have something so sensitive that, you know, sources and methods shouldn't be disclosed. But I can't imagine what it would be that would be so sensitive in some of these departments, ODOT, for example. Why would I have to do a public records request to get an ODOT audit?
So, Madam Chair, as I indicated when we started the conversation, we really view this as an opportunity to get input about how we might improve this. So let us take this back to the council and discuss. I think in the light of transparency, it may make sense to automatically post them. I think we need to have a conversation with agencies to see, can they then go through a process to determine if there's sensitive information that they need to redact out before they're posted.
I'd like a definition of sensitive information too, because we have some agencies that are in deep trouble from bad management. And if they deem that to be sensitive, we got a problem. If it's the names of kids in foster care, that's a whole different deal. But I don't want audits withheld from the public that are covering up malfeasance or mismanagement or just plain bungling. And I could very easily see a bill for the next session saying that audits, barring some finding by some neutral third-party adjudicator, that these are all public.
Madam Co-Chair, let us go back and look into it. Okay.
Okay.
I'm making notes. Okay.
Representative Wisnett.
Madam Co-Chair, thank you for those comments. And the good Senator Thatcher and myself were on the transparency website. The authors
mission.
Of that bill.
Are you
commission.
Not on the website.
And I'm not sure that this would be exempt, but I appreciate and hope that the director can go back and find ways to make this public or on the transparency website. Thank you.
Got it. The last table that I wanted to bring to your attention is page 12, and I think this is indeed a table that needs a lot of guidance and help. I think there's no question that there are value-added activities that internal auditors provide. As we review this information, it appears that agencies are all over the map in terms of what they determine are value-added activities and submitting those. So we're going to spend some time with the council to provide some clarity on what really is a value-added activity, and let me give you an example. What I'm learning from auditors is there's a trend in the industry to do, in addition to actual formal internal audits, what they call consulting activities. To me, that would qualify as a value-added activity that should go on this chart. There are some things on here that probably don't need to be listed. And so this is a place for sure where we're going to be going back and working with the council on defining better definition of what is a value-added activity and what is it that we think internal auditors should be spending their time on. Now then, with that being said, we do have a Secretary of State's audit, which is happening now, which is also going to provide guidance in terms of the role of internal auditors. So we've got a lot of information coming at us that we'll take here in the next year and look to improve the information that's provided to you all.
Well, let me put a little finer point on your conversation. We have all sat in hearings and listened to agencies' lamentations about how little money they have to perform their core functions. And I'm really quite quizzical about why ODF&W auditors ought to be sitting on the City of Salem Budget Committee and the Marion County Compensation Board when they say that they don't have enough time and money to do their core function.
And Madam Co-Chair, we had that pointed out to us, so we actually checked with that ODF&W. These are activities that internal auditor is doing on their own time, so it's not part of their state job and not compensated by the state. So this would be an example of something that really shouldn't belong on as a listed as a value-added activity. That's something that they're doing on their own time. Obviously, I'm sure it brings increased knowledge and it's a benefit to the city and the county, but isn't part of their work and value added activity that they bring to their state position.
Thank you. That just leapt out. I'm glad there was an explanation for that.
You're not the only one who I know. So, Madam Co-Chair and members, In closing, I know I've mentioned this a couple of times. There really is an opportunity right now for us to take some information, both the work that we're doing with Lisa Upshaw, new to the Department of Administrative Services, to go back and working with the council. We've been taking notes. We ask the council members to make sure they get a chance to listen to this committee hearing, so they are hearing the same thing that we are. And then we've got the Secretary of State's audit that's underway now. And I'm sure you haven't heard this very often, but I'm actually excited to get the results of this audit. And they've identified their two objectives, and I know the chief auditor is going to speak to this, and I'm not going to say much more other than, one, what do state agency internal audit functions need to be effective? And the second objective is, what steps does DAS need to take in order to effectively coordinate and promote the internal audit function at state agencies? So coming year, finding some more answers, taking the information that we have, and hopefully really doing a better job of demonstrating what internal audit functions in the state actually do produce.
Colleagues, any questions? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Director, the internal auditor, does she work directly for you?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Wisnett, Lisa is our new internal auditor at DAS. So DAS has one audit position, which I think is something that the Secretary of State's office is looking at, whether one position at DAS is adequate to both.
But she reports to you?
She reports to me.
Okay, follow up, Madam Co-Chair. Follow up. Thank you. And if I were a director, I'd feel more comfortable if I take over an organization to have someone give me an audit report. Mm-hmm. In the military, if you take over a command, first thing you do is ask for an inspector general to come in and inspect you to be sure everything's up to speed and you don't get blamed for something. So is there any way to implement that in state policy?
So, Madam Co-Chair, Representative Wisnett, I think in state government land, that's determined a risk assessment, and that is required for internal auditors to complete for their agencies. So you start with a risk assessment, which kind of highlights an overarching view of the agency and where potential risks are, and then you take that information as a director and my chief executive committee to review then where do we want to pick and go in with a more specific audit to look at a risk area. So there are guidelines both in terms of agencies doing a risk assessment as well as a risk-based audit. So Lisa, as the internal auditor for DAS, that would be her portfolio. But in addition, DAS has the oversight role for all other state agencies. And so I think one of the questions we have is whether one person can adequately perform all of those functions.
Thank you.
If I could add a little follow-up. There was a period of time, and Kip may have been made familiar with this as he's come into his role, but the law used to provide that the Secretary of State do a change of director audit when those positions changed over. And I can't tell you off the top of my head. I'd have to go back and look. That was changed a while back because they were spending so much time on those, and not all of those were high risk. So they still occasionally are requested to do one or choose to do one if they believe it's a high-risk situation, but it's not just a function that occurs all of the time anymore.
Follow-up. So could this committee, is that a mission of the committee? Could we say that we think these agencies are so important and involve so much money that they should always have an audit when you have a director change?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's obviously something that could be discussed by the committee of how you might look at when setting criteria or working with audits on a direction about when those might occur.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Probably worth thinking about whether you'd want to do them in all cases, but
no.
You've raised an important point, though, and that's how we flag some of the stuff that I think would warrant further discussion. For me, having the audits be public, unless there was some process to specifically redact or to hold them back from public scrutiny. Your question about change of director audits, particularly if there's even a whiff that the change was not voluntary. Those sorts of things I'd like to park someplace and have the committee have the opportunity to at least discuss whether or not, if this committee is allowed to introduce bills in the next session, that might be questions for committee bills.
And Madam Co-Chair, just to clarify as well, those change of director audits, as I understood it, were external audits. So that was not an internal audit function. That was a Secretary of State function.
That is correct.
It also, before you leave, Director, it also renews the question about the role of DAS. An activist DAS that is the mother of all state agencies that demands certain conformity from all of the other agencies, or whether it's more passive and you just get reported to on a sort of as-needed basis. It used to be, when I was paying more attention to this, that DAS sent out very explicit budget instructions, budget prep and timelines and those sorts of things. It would not strike me as unfamiliar territory for DAS to opine for uniformity across agencies with respect to the availability of their audits, the independence of their internal auditors, those sorts of things. But it I think, cries out for a greater conversation between the legislature and DAS about what legislative expectations are in terms of informing agencies for uniform performance. So it's not so hit and miss.
Madam Co-Chair, I have heard you loud and clear. I think there are places where DAS is still very, very an activist agency. So you mentioned the budget instructions. Those will be formally revealed on March 15th. We bring in all agencies. The instructions are very clear. I think there are some other places where, frankly, for a variety of reasons, resources being one of those, that we just don't pay attention to all of the places that we should. Message has been heard, and I think there will be more of an activist approach, because that is what I'm hearing the legislature is interested in.
Colleagues, any other questions for Director Koba? Welcome, Ms. Upshaw. And we'll look forward to seeing more of you as time progresses. Thank you for attending today.
Thanks.
And with that, we'd invite up the Secretary of State.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Kip Mamet. I'm the Audits Director for the Secretary of State's office. Thank you for having me in today. And I know you're all excited about geeking out on audit. So really, actually, without the joke aside, very appreciative of you guys giving the forum to talk about auditing. Obviously, I have some passion around it. No one grows up to be a government auditor, so we've all had to adjust our careers and our dreams, but some of us who land here are very fortunate to work in this position. I've got a presentation here. You already know I've got the gift of gab, so please interrupt me. I was asked by staff to come in and talk about the audit we're doing, auditing the internal audit functions of the state of Oregon. I'm very excited about this audit. It probably got the least amount of attention of anything in our public published audit plan, but I think it could be one of the most impactful, honestly. I've worked both as an internal and an external auditor in government space and in the private sector, so I know both perspectives. They're very different jobs, but of course there's a lot of similarities as well. I'll get a little existential in a few minutes because you guys brought it up about really what is the role of an internal auditor in the public sector. And let me tease you with that, but I'll get to that in a minute because I wanted to just talk about a couple of other general concepts. Auditing, obviously I'm biased, very important in these days. The objectivity, the audit you can trust, that's an important deal because of what I call three things going on right now. I'm not a brain a genius with these. We've got increased partisanship. We've got these increasingly complex public issues, public health, infrastructure, all these things. And then we have this like absolute overkill of information, very little of it objective, very of little of it peer-reviewed and trustworthy. And so people like you get a lot of information thrown at you, but how much of it can you trust? The audit profession needs and strives for giving you that objective information that you can weigh with all the other information you get. So we take it very seriously. That is one reason why we put this in the audit plan. And, you know, we only have so many resources, so it's a big commitment to get that to focus on internal auditing. A couple points about it. The intent of this audit is actually to elevate the function. Obviously, we have a little bit of a bias there as professional auditors ourselves, but we're going to do it like we try to do with all of our audits through compelling evidence. And so one of those things will be educating. We're going to spend a significant amount of our introduction of this report educating whoever's interested about it, about the differences between internal and external auditing. Some key concepts around auditing driven by auditing standards. I won't bore you with that. If you ever want me to come in and talk auditing standards, there are sets of them that govern. There are different ones that govern, for example, the Secretary of State's office. We adhere to standards promulgated by the U.S. Government Accountability Office. Most of the internal audit functions here adhere to standards promulgated by the Institute of Internal Auditors, who are the biggest nonprofit, but they also handle all the corporate people. They're the largest professional audit organization in the world. I serve on the American Center for Government Auditing, their government branch board, and so I'm pretty connected in with what the IA does. They issue most of our professional certifications as well. I plan to bring that networking to this audit in terms of bringing criteria that is, you know, gold standard criteria on what audit function should look at. We'll also be looking with several other professional organizations as well, and their advocacy people, to kind of, again, bring forth information about what audit function should look at, the pros and cons, the value adds, and so forth.
Mr. Mamet?
Yes.
Have you noticed across agencies whether or not there's any dispute about what standards are being used? When you've got internal auditors embedded in a number of agencies, which I think is terrific, are they subscribing to the same standard? Should the state of Oregon have a uniform standard out of the universe that you just articulated? Or are there legitimate disputes in auditor land about what the gold standard should be?
Co-Chair Johnson, fantastic question. There is not. They actually, so just via background, my first role before Secretary of State is I was the Chief Audit Executive for the State Treasury Department. That's what brought me to Oregon. And so I got involved with the council that Director Kobo was referring to, the Chief Audit Executive Council. I've attended every meeting since I've been in the state. We just met with them last week. We're talking to them about this audit. We're vetting it. We're doing it collaboratively. But to answer your question, Senator, they all adhere to these standards. There's only really a couple of sets that are generally accepted. There's not that many separate sets. The Oregon statutes, as I believe it right now, I should have brushed up on those, but I'm pretty confident in saying they require that these functions do adhere to a set of standards, and rightly so. Most of them have chosen the IA Red Book standards. In fact, I think all of them have. So there is no dispute about what standards to be followed.
Thank you.
So a couple things I do want to echo off that. We have a very strong Chief Audit Executive community. I know these professionals. I've been around a little bit. They're top drawer. They're committed. They're certified. They have experience. And so, again, I want we're doing this to support them. We'll obviously point out where we have weakness and so forth, but I want to relay to the legislature and citizens that you've got a good internal audit community out there. I would say this, as the director just noted, you've shrunk the state has shrunk resources about to 50% of your internal auditors. A lot of the theory, whether you like auditors or not, when they're most valuable is when you're doing lean times, when you need people to find money, when you need solutions. And that's often, of course, because they're seen as support, they're cut. And it's kind of this, you know, vicious circle of you're cutting them at a time when you need them most. But again, one thing out there that you've heard me in prior testimony is showing the impact. And there's something out there that I would call the auditor paradox, which is auditors do all this work, they hand it to legislators, and legislators don't do anything with it. And I used to get angry at the legislators, but this is America. We are not selling our products. People are not understanding the value of these audits. And so that's where I've doubled down, really focusing on what are we producing? You've asked some questions today about what are these reports? Can you get them publicly? There's been questions about the Secretary of State's office that I would have thought had been answered decades ago about what we do and where we are. So a big part of our thrust in both this audit and in every audit we do is educating people about the value of auditing and what it's supposed to be doing.
I guess I would pose the global question to you. What can we do to help? I think one of the things that is of growing concern against the backdrop of the white noise coming out of the federal government is how do you ensure the impartiality of the audits? How do you depoliticize them to the largest degree possible? How do you put them in Oregonians' hands? And again, I'm reinforcing my own bias by this question, so that Oregonians are asking intelligent questions about agency operations. But if you were advising the legislature, what would you tell us as far as elevating the value of audit to ordinary taxpaying Oregonians to see that they're getting value for taxes paid?
Madam Co-Chair Johnson, doing, and I'm not saying this in a patronizing kind of way, doing exactly what you're doing in this committee, giving us a pulpit to talk about the work, to Get it. And by the way, you may have noticed auditors have kind of thin skin sometimes. They can dish it out, but they can't always take it. I hope we don't show that on the Secretary of State's office. But giving us the feedback on the audits, every audit we presented here, I've been proud of, but I've heard every one of the critiques that you've brought. And again, we'll be working on those and showing you, hopefully, progress on those really great questions. But I think it's elevating the function and talking about it. You mentioned politics. You know, a lot of auditors, one reason we haven't been out there in a public value proposition is because we hide. We're not supposed to go near the third rail. You know, auditors aren't supposed to get in there, but to have impact. And the state of Oregon, as Denver, the city where I came from before, had done, they gave the ultimate independent structure by giving the audit function to an elected official. So obviously that's got an issue in terms of you've got an elected official overseeing it, but you've really got an independent audit function that way that's beholden to no one but the taxpayer. And again, so you got to make sure that that entity is adhering to audit standards. We are required by the Constitution to do that. We have a peer review every 3 years. We'll be having one next year. That's who audits the auditors. They come in, they look at our risk assessment, they pull audits, they pull work papers, they talk to people like you, and they make an opinion if we're in compliance with standards. But Senator Johnson, I really appreciate that question, because I think the more airtime we get on our work, the more value will be there. And I think that's the intent of one thing I'd like to do with the permission of this committee going forward is when we brief our follow-up reports. You know, that's gonna show the real impact. That's really the end of, did this issue get accepted and did it get fixed? And can we, in an audit grade position, do that? And having the agency up here, there'll be a few situations where we didn't fix it. And then I think that's important to own that too. But I think a majority of the time, and this is certainly my experience, you'll come back showing issues resolved. And I think that can build public trust as well.
Thank you, Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you for your comments. You're getting ready to do an audit on internal auditors throughout the state agencies. I hope this is not a stupid question. What is an auditor, one auditor in an agency, what does their 8-hour work day do? What do they do?
Co-chairs, Representative Wisnant, great question. I think it varies greatly depending on the organization and the auditor. If you'll indulge me, kind of getting in the objectives will kind of help you know where I'm looking to flesh this out exactly. So the objectives were, and if I don't get to it, but I'm sure I will, please remind me. One is, how do we maximize the value of these audit functions? And two, what is DAS's coordination role? One thing I've heard loud and clear from this committee, from the governor's people, from legislators offline, is recommendations that actually are doable, right? And so a lot of our reports sort of have that gold standard kind of recommendation. But we're going to keep putting those out there, but realizing we don't have the resources to add 700 people at foster care and whatnot. We still feel compelled to point that out. But what we're really going to be working on is incrementally developing recommendations with the practitioners on known problems to fix it. So I hope you'll see that further. One of the big pieces, Representative Wisnant, we're looking at in this audit all has to do with what you guys have been talking about, which is independence. In the internal audit community, that's always been a gray area, and it is kind of by design, because you want to have that trust of an auditor that can go into your deepest, scariest places, and you trust him. In the corporate sector, right, you have your vice president of marketing and your vice president of sales and your vice president of audit. They're there with the chief information officer, the chief financial officer. They're at the dinner table with legal counsel. They're one of those. Our structure, while it's noble in Oregon to require the function, that's ahead of a lot of states, just to legally require them. They're called chief audit executives. That's a fancy title. They're not. They're not mainly working at that level. They're more like mid-level management. They're generally not at the dinner table, so to speak. And it really is dependent on the personality of both the leadership in that agency and the internal auditor to determine where they're going to go. So a lot of our audit is going to be looking at structure around that. So independence. Who does the auditor report to? Administratively and non, do they have audit committees? You've talked about audit committees. That's a big piece. Again, the state requires those are good. But what are those audit committees doing? How are they comprised? One thing I noticed in the great DAS report was there's a lot of people, and this was certainly the case in Treasury, but they had both, is they have a lot of internal management on their audit committees. And that can be an okay thing, but from a best practice, you generally want outsiders with the transparency. I want to get at the item that you brought up that I think is most significant about public reporting. And that is something we're grappling with on this audit as well, because again, if you have this trust like you do in the corporate sector where you have proprietary information, Google knows their trade secrets and that's never going to be public, You know, if I'm at Treasury and I know their biggest risk, putting those out publicly to the legislature, to the Oregonian, changes the dynamic of me as an internal auditor in that organization. Because, and so there's a, you know, a theoretical question here is, what does internal auditing really look like in the public sector? Because as my colleague noted, they're all subject to public records. You can pull them, so they're not really confidential documents like they would be in the private sector. So one thing we're looking at from this audit is, what makes sense there? How can we preserve that partnership relationship that they have with, as an internal auditor, the go-to type people? And they often are. In Treasury, I was asked to do a whole wide range of things, and some of it was audit, and I don't say that disrespectfully, because they really wanted to go there. But we really will be looking at those structures. We'll be looking at the skill sets of the individuals involved. One thing I noticed from the DAS report, and this is not uncommon, but it's one of the risks we face in government, there's very few certified information systems auditors. Our IT audit capability is weak. And that's not uncommon. It's hard to pay IT auditors on public sector salaries. I'm proud to say we've got a really great team in the Secretary of State's office, but you're not really getting that coverage in most agencies that I know of, and you're paying a lot of money. They are paying a lot of money for consulting services for these highly specialized services. And you know, you can do cost benefit on that, but that is something we're going to be looking at in terms of the audit, is percentage of consulting services. And I hope to even do kind of a staffing analysis on cost of that, because outsourcing to big four, big five firms is great, but they don't come cheap. And so we're going to be looking at that as well. A couple other quick points here.
Before you move on, I just want to thank you for helping with my education. I just got done making a plea that every single audit ought to be public. Your example of Treasury has given me pause to think about the dilemma that you're facing to make sure that there's adequate transparency, but also incredibly deleterious if, and this is totally, anybody that's listening out there in internet land, this is not the facts, this is just a conversation, but if there was a material deficiency at a significant agency, what that might do in terms of public confidence or employee confidence. So you've just helped with my thinking, and I appreciate your tutorial.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions before Mr. Mount moves on?
And I'm almost done with my dump.
Move on.
I appreciate it. So the other thing we'll be looking at is also from the Secretary of State's office, which matters, is what is really the impact of these audits? I mean, some of it is qualitative and hard to put down, right? The watchdog role, can you ever quantify that they know someone is coming to look at it? But that's not enough to justify positions. So again, we're going to be looking at internal auditors and how do they measure their impact. And then we're going to be, you know, just concurrently, anything that I'm going to be asking internal auditors to do, we're doing at the Secretary of State's office. So you'll be, and I think we talked about that last time. But that will really show where this impact is, where do these reports go, how are they handled by internal management, the audit committee, and then what's done to mitigate the issues.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That was exceptionally helpful. And I just would like the record to reflect that Representative Wisnett had a conflict, and he's excused for the remainder of the meeting. Any other questions or comments?
I have one comment.
Co-Chair McLean.
Besides being just informational, which I appreciated as well, it really gives the full circle, and that's been my whole feeling the whole time that I've been on this committee, or was even placed on the committee, was why would I want to do this work? Well, the reason I want to do this work is because it is the full cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, you budget. You have programs developed, they function, they are sometimes work really well, sometimes don't. Right. The public does and doesn't understand. Legislators want to improve it. But the only way we can do that is if we spend some time on reviews of those programs and those budgets. And to me, we're all on the same team trying to improve the function of the government, the transparency of the government, and also the functionality of the budget itself. So that's the goal.
That's a very elegant way to state that.
Co-chairs, that's our goal, too. I mean, it really is. We're part of this government family. Like I tell everybody, I'm a government guy. I don't want government to look bad. I want it to succeed. I saw the senator with some students before I got in here. I want student engagement. And so, again, our audits are really trying to educate, and we want to be educated from you, because if you're not buying what we're selling, then we got a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, absent any more questions, that might be a lovely place to conclude our business for today. Thank you for
Thank you.
Very informative tutorial. Colleagues, anything for the good of the order? Ms. McHugh, anything we should be thinking about for the rest of the week?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, Wednesday we will be meeting and we will be discussing the audit on alternative and online education that needed to be bumped. So that's the Wednesday agenda.
Hey, colleagues, anything for the good of the order? There being none, we're adjourned.